Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And, you know, I tell you, I look at some of the things that are going on around the world, and, you know, it kind of makes you scratch your head wondering, you know, I guess we could start in the political arena. You know, as we look at, I guess let's start with the Democratic Party, and we've got Hillary Clinton, still the front runner, still the favorite probably to win, and yet she's got so many skeletons in her closet that are really not in her closet. They're like out in the open. Is that really the best that they can do? Is that the best this country can bring? Is someone who has clearly brought a lot of headache to them. You know, you've got the email scandal. I mean, you've got scandal after scandal for years, and yet that's what they had to bring, and that's the leader. Do we really think that Hillary's the one that can lead us out of the crap that we have to deal with now? Is that not prove to everyone that our political system is broken down? Does that not show you right out in front that we got problems? Okay. Now, again, I'm not blaming either party. I could care less. I think they both suck. Okay. I mean, John Boehner, you know, suddenly retires and quits, which is fine. I mean, he's no bargain either. But are we really at that point where either nobody who is any good wants to run, nobody cares enough about it, that we're going to actually look at potentially having a representation of a Hillary Clinton on the top of the board? You know, I think that's funny. And I think it's sad. Actually, it's not funny. It's sad when you think about what she has done, what Slick Willie has done over the years. And yet that's that's who we're leading to as a potential front runner for the Democratic Party. Now, of course, I'm on record as saying that Hillary will not win the nomination. I don't think she's in it. I think this is a problem. I think that she's going to get beat, and I think it's going to be by Biden. And I know we keep hearing the speculation about what's going to happen, but do we really... Is Hillary Clinton the best you can offer? You know, or Carson, or, you know, I mean, it's really a shame that at this point, you know, that we are totally have left what was intended for this country. And you know what bothers me, I think, more than anything is, well, they're not politicians, the outsiders. They don't know how the political system works. Well, maybe that's more of the problem than the solution, okay? Maybe the solution is getting away from people that know how the political system works. I mean, certainly the big donors know how it works, because the big donors, they don't care who wins. They just want to make sure that their special interests are taken care of. So they're going to donate equally to everybody because they have so much money, especially because of the crap that's been going on, you know, for the last 6 years. And they're going to buy their vote and buy their support. Isn't that a sad state of affairs when you've got nobody will pick a side who is of value? I mean, you know, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, you know, all of them. They're giving to both parties, saying, okay, well, whoever gets in, they're going to love me because I gave them a lot of dough, and I'm going to be able to benefit from what they do. You know, I think that is, in my opinion, that is the overall problem, that A, we have these elections that go on forever. I mean, you know, you realize that we've already been talking about this since March. Okay. The election is not until a year from November, so we're still 14 months away. And of course, this will change, I think, with the first primaries in February. So are we really at this point where we're going to spend billions and billions of dollars to listen to a bunch of jackasses that have no, in my opinion, again, this is my opinion, that have no real interest in fixing the country? Now, you know, you can look at all of them, and you can look at Donald Trump. I mean, look, he's got a lot of good ideas, but it's my opinion that Donald Trump has no intention of actually running for president. I think Donald Trump is, you know, a billionaire who found some new toys to play with, and he likes being in the media. He likes showing off what he's got to say. And again, I agree with a lot of what he says. You know, I mean, you know, I don't care about his faults. I think that we all have faults, but I think that he's just wasting time and creating more turmoil. And, you know, I think we're going to see that he's just going to back out after a while and say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I don't want to run. And again, what I don't like about it is that I think he's actually creating more of a problem, and it's actually benefiting the opposite of what his voiced opinion is. You know, I mean, I do happen to think that, you know, Carly Fiorina would be a good candidate. I don't care what happened at Hewlett-Packard. You know, you can't blame a company's problems. You know, look, let's just back up for a minute. The country, I think Obama's been one of the worst presidents ever, okay? But I wouldn't fault him for the economic collapse or the economic, and I wouldn't give him credit for what has happened to the economy, because, again, one thing about being the president is the United States is always evolving, and there's always times that are changing. So sometimes you come in at the right time, and sometimes you come in at the wrong time. Well, as far as the stock market was concerned, I mean, we were at lows when he came in, and we know that the stock market goes up year over year. So it only made sense. Now, in my opinion, he didn't do anything to promote that. Okay. But at the end of the day, I couldn't blame him if he didn't do well that part. And I can't credit him either. But that doesn't make him the better or the worst president ever. What makes him the worst president are his policies, his inability to recognize what's going on, his antagonistic view of everybody, his total disregard for what the people want, because I think deep down inside he'd rather be a dictator. I think he'd much rather run a communist or a socialist party. I don't think that he is, you know, worth anything as far as benefiting. I mean, I think that he has single-handedly brought the middle class down because of who he is. But again, this is not a bashing Obama. This is just, you know, is this the best? I guess the question is this the best we have to offer? Again, no matter what side of the aisle you sit on. Pretty scary when you look around and see some of the candidates that are getting support. But that was the old Bubba editorial. No big deal. Again, I don't pick sides. I want the country to run smoothly and good and not have any issues and really get back to what the intended part of the United States was to be the most successful, the best place in the world, which it still is the best, but we could do a hell of a lot better. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We are going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back with our friend Jane King. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back.
Wake up, Maggie. I think I got something to
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for my friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, and just all about everywhere. Every TV you turn on, you're going to find my friend Jane King. What's up, Jane?
Hey, it's like good to talk to you today. New York is very interesting right now because the Pope's in town. So just getting around the city is crazy. I'm glad you're not here because, you know,
I'd have a
difficult time.
I'd have a nervous breakdown because I can't stand getting around city normally. So, so Jane, okay, I don't know. There's so many things, but I know, you know, you and I talk other times. I know you got a great story to share with the audience. Let's hear your story.
Okay, well, you and I kind of feel the same way. I'm gathering about big government, and I was at the passport office just recently, and my husband and I need to renew our passports. We're going to try to get the kids' passports so they can go see their aunt and uncle perhaps in Hong Kong next year. We're also going to San Diego in November, and we need a passport now to go down to Mexico. We may not do that, but we wouldn't have passports just in case we wanted to take a little day trip to Mexico. So, of course, they're not open during, you know, most people's convenient hours. They're open from 10 to 3. So I pick up the kids from school at 2:50, literally run to the passport office, sweating, getting there, out of breath. And they tell me I need another copy of something, but they don't have a copy machine. So I'm running two blocks to go down to this copy machine, get it there. I get back there, slow, kind of rude, the way they treated people, not just me, there were other people in line. Some of them didn't speak great English and they were very condescending to them. And I love how they do things. They have papers posted all over the place of, Form DMS 82, you can't pick that up here. And Form 8940, you can't get that here. And it's such a negative experience. And I was telling my husband, I was like, and there's some people who want more of this. And it's just such a bad experience. And it just, I think, really goes to show that how government is just inefficient and not pleasant and not with the time.
No, I mean, again, of course they're not. And why don't they have the forms? And why don't they simplify the application process a little bit? But of course, listen, when you're working 10 to 3, I mean, you know, what the hell? And they're probably making a lot of money to work that 10 to 3, and they look at you like you're whacked when you get in line with them. And I don't know, Jane, it's amazing that we do want more of this big government, and we want to continue to spend more money than we make. It's a great business model, as long as you, I guess, have the ability to keep printing money. And of course, now it looks like, you know, our good friend Janet Yellen in her speech decided that, well, maybe we can raise interest rates. Now, of course, me, the conspiracy theorist, I say she was just saying that just to soften the blow on the markets, because the markets didn't like what they said after the Fed meeting. But I believe that they're just, again, there is going to be no rate increase. I don't know how the growth magically appeared between the last meeting and when she had her speech. So you tell me, you've been around, you've been in this business for a long time. What's changed in the past 7 days or 8 days?
Well, basically what changed was a lot of criticism of her and the way the Fed was handling this. And people felt that, I don't think there was a big surprise that they didn't move on rates last week. But I think what everybody was surprised by was some of the comments that they made afterwards. Like, that she was talking about, like, negative rates, or we don't see that happening. I mean, the fact that she even went there, I think, was shocking to people. And, you know, extremely dovish. And I think that caused a lot of people to go, whoa, what is the Fed seeing on the horizon that we are not seeing? And, of course, we had the market sell off. And so it was very vague, and much more vague than what we were used to with Bernanke and Greenspan. And I think, you know, that's what that speech was about last night, just trying to clarify things. And, of course, she did hedge her bets, saying that the economic data must show before they would do a hike in interest rates. But if we get economic data like we've been getting, I expect to see a rate hike this year, just for nothing else, to save face and have a do-over.
Well, there is no way we're getting raising this year. But so my question is, why do they have all their little henchmen? You know, they all have, you know, back in the day, there wasn't a speech. You heard from Greenspan, You heard from Volcker. You didn't have every Fed governor having his own press conference every other day, saying different things every other day. Do you like this new supposed transparent Fed? I mean, I think it's more of a manipulative Fed. I think that it has taken a lot away from everybody, and it really takes away their credibility. What do you think?
Well, I think the Fed does have a credibility problem now, given just the fact that there really isn't transparency, even though my understanding a few years ago was that it was all going to change. Almost every day, and certainly this week, every day there's been a Fed speech somewhere. Lockhart, Bullard, Esther George. I mean, somebody is giving a speech somewhere, and they know that we're watching every word they say, and we're going to parse it, and the market's going to respond to it. And so these things are all very designed to get a certain outcome. And it's very different than the old days, but it's that kind of era that we're in. It's kind of like the Fed's way of big data. I mean, let's get out there, let's say a few things, let's study everything, let's reduce our risk, and just design this for a certain outcome rather than based on what the economy needs.
And don't you believe that really it should be just what the economy says? Don't you believe in free market capitalism, that the markets should decide, they decide the price of corn, they decide the price of crude oil. Shouldn't they decide the price of equity markets and whether or not the Fed is able or not to raise rates? Don't you think free market should be the way? And I don't think that's what we have right now.
No, that's what the Fed has was designed to do. Was just kind of control the money supply, and not really try to control the market or try to figure out what the American psychology is in terms of what they say and what happens to the stock market and will people keep spending. And so there's a lot more decisions and international. I mean, I don't ever remember Alan Greenspan, making decisions based on China and what their markets were doing. I mean, I just can't imagine. Like, it seems impossible, really. Sometimes the best answer is to keep things simple, but that's certainly not what the Fed is doing these days.
Well, I mean, again, I just think, and you, again, we talk about your background a lot because it's really important to what you and I talk about, but, your family, they don't, they sit back and whatever the market bears, that's what they sell their grains at. I mean, they're not manipulating. They're not getting the benefit. In fact, they're being more penalized by what's going on because of what's happening with the dollar. But overall, I mean, in the grain markets and all the commodity markets, more or less, it's debated by free market and by what, if you can sell it for more, great. If you can't, this is what you got to take. And I think that's what we've missed over the last 6 years, is actually the ability to have a free market decide what's going to be next. And I think that's a sad state of affairs, in my opinion. How about yours?
Well, I think it's just part of what our society is these days, that everybody needs their handheld, everybody needs their little binky. We're not smart enough to be able to save money or hedge the crops or diversify. The Fed just, wants to continue this machine that we've been on since, 70s or 80s. Got to keep consumers spending, got to keep interest rates low. Of course, that leads to more debt, and at some point, that's going to be a problem. I don't know when, though.
Well, that is. I mean, look, that was the problem in Greece. Okay, now we're not Greece, and I'm not saying we are, but when you keep spending more than you make, that eventually causes a problem because eventually you run out of money. And I'm not saying we're running out, and again, I'm not creating the panic alarm, but I am saying that it should be a concern. And it is a problem overall in the general economy that we cannot continue at this pace of printing, making bigger government, spending more money than they actually take in. I think that becomes overall the bigger problem. But are you more comfortable with what's going on in China now? Because I know you're obviously an investor there.
Things seem to have settled down a little bit. I'm afraid to open my statement that I get from China every month from the China Fund. But, it seems like things have calmed down, although I'm not sure that the basic underlying issues have been solved there. I mean, they still have a slowdown. Xi Jinping is here. They still have issues with cybersecurity. I mean, if they're going to really be a true global player in business that they want to be, You know, they have to take care of some of these issues. I think they will. I think they're smart, but I think they're going to, you know, start to crack down more on hacking, I hope. Also of the pollution, you know, some of the environmental issues that they have. Sometimes the U.S. can go overboard in those issues, but China needs to do more. So I think they're immature. I mean, it's an immature economy. They have the brains and they have the people to be able to be big, and I hope they can navigate their way there.
Jane King, you're awesome. Lila Max Media, The Ka-Ching Report, thank you so much. It's great to have you on The Bubba Show.
Thank you, Todd.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break.
You're so delicious. You're so.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for our man, our expert in the field of not only ETFs, but the expert in the field of precious metals and bonds and the entire market, my man Mike McClone from ETF Securities. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, listen, you know, how could I not have you back? You're my man. You got it down pretty good. So, Mike, we saw... You know, last week the Fed didn't do anything and the markets didn't like it and they sold off. And then, of course, all last week they sold off and until Friday. And then Friday morning, they decided after Janet Yellen gagging on her speech that she might indicate raising rates, the markets took off and exploded to the upside. Is that because they really want the rates to rise, or was that maybe more of just a dead cat bounce and just an excuse to see the markets rise?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. It's kind of a surprising situation now that we've come to that the market responds positively to potential Fed tightening rhetoric. But it's only because the market got near the lower end of the range when we've been watching the range. And I like to watch the number one traded ETF in the world, SPY. And the upper end of the range has been 200, which is basically about 2,000 in the S&P 500 index. And the lower end of the range has been 190, which is basically 1,900 in S&P 500. So we're near the lower end of the range. The Fed comes out with this talk about, oh, we're doing better and we might raise rates. And the market says, okay, I guess it's just a bit of a shortcut covering thing, but overall, raising rates is not a good thing, and it's a good thing if we have wind in the sails of economic indicators. And the only thing they're pointing to is unemployment. So I look at industrial production on the year. It's weak. It's down on the year. It's down over the last 12 months. I look at PPI. It's running, you know, negative 3% almost. Retail sales, we've been talking around a lot. The trend has been down on the year, down last, you know, 6 months, in the last 4 years. Even bond yields are still down. And I see, and I also know, so those are lagging measures of the economy, and they're trending down. So to me, if you're the Fed, you don't tighten until you see those trending up. And then if you look at the forward-looking indicators of the economy, you look at inflation, key one would be commodities down in the year, really getting hammered. Lately, it's been the stock market down in the year, and, you know, bond yields declining. I see deflationary trends, and to me, that's a pretty shocking environment for the Fed to be talking tightening. I think they're still doing the same thing, is they're trying to talk up the economy, and they're trying to potentially really prick the bubble without having to really do it. And the bubble, we all know, has been this massive QE-inspired rally we had in the stock market over the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, I mean, now, you know, I look at it like this. This is my way of saying, is this not a little bit more manipulation by the Fed to keep the stock market afloat because they realize what they said? This is like almost the opposite of when Ben Bernanke indicated raising rates in May of 2013 and the market collapsed. So they had what they call the taper tantrum. And now they didn't raise rates, so the market had a tantrum. So now it's like Janet Yellen saying, oh, okay, well, maybe we'll raise rates. But I don't see him raising rates. I don't give a crap what she says. I think it's just a bunch of rhetoric, in my opinion. What's yours?
Well, I think if it's actually can be, we can narrow it down to a very simple premise. If the stock market goes up, they're going to raise rates. I mean, I think that's a good premise. They've said it, and got, you know, New York Fed Governor Dudley and Janet Yellen both used the term excessive risk taking. That wasn't my words. Those were their words. They were worried about excessive risk taking. I think if the stock market gives them the green light, they'll do it. And we all know if this trend from August, now we're only getting late into September, trend of lower stock prices and high volatility continues. If we know if that continues, let's not, you know, beat around the bush. If that continues, they're going to have to start talking about easing. That's my point, is if it continues. And unfortunately, we're both afraid it's going to.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, again, I look at everything. And of course, one of the things you mentioned to me, I still think that either hedged portfolios or cash is king. What's your take?
Both. Exactly. I mean, I think the first thing we can say, and to really, you know, be honest with our listeners, is in a global deflationary environment, cash is king. Number one, we just have to remember that. Now, of course, hopefully I'm wrong about deflation, but boy, 5 years down in a row, from commodity indices, bond yields declining, stocks declining. Now, that's pretty much deflation. It's PPI negative. Now, what if that's wrong? But also, there's also things that can perform very well in deflation, or even in a hedge portfolio, like the bond market is still, it's really perked up this week, and I think it's getting, you know, got to very attractive levels. And one thing is also, you and I have been looking at gold, silver. They've perked up. And if this deflationary, you know, if we start, and finally, I think the key thing that's really been repressing or suppressing gold and silver prices, not only is this collapse in commodity prices, but has been all this tightening in the forward curve. So it's all circled back to the stock market. If, you know, the stock market goes up, that tightening is going to come about. If the stock market goes down, that tightening is not going to come out. It probably shouldn't. And, you know, things like gold and silver should do better. And, you know, the bond market.
Well, you know, I tell you, interesting, and you know, we've watched it, and of course, we both like silver especially, and of course, I've been all over SIVR, and I've actually sold some puts in there, so that was good. But you know, when you look at it, and you look at the picture, and we go, okay, so here's what they're doing, and here's what's going on, but in the meantime, we haven't seen any really change in anything. Okay, but just the way that the equities are trading. But again, as we said at the top, is we've seen a meltdown, you know, down to some major support levels. So you would expect a natural bounce off of that level anyways. So there we have that. And then, of course, now you've got the new the VW scandal. Now, to me, look, I know all about scandals. I've seen them. I've had them, you know. But it's not putting them out of business. And B, I think they knew what they were doing. And C, it has nothing to do with the overall American stock market when we were selling off earlier in the week, which everybody tried to insist that it was. What's your take?
Well, it shouldn't, but it's had an indirect impact because it's hurt the other auto manufacturers a little bit, you know, guilt by association. And it's such a shocking revelation that these, you know, people would do such a thing that I think a lot of people are fearing, well, is there other mark, you know, other auto manufacturers that are doing something similar? But for us at ETF Securities, we have the main platinum and palladium U.S. dollar-based ETFs. And kind of one of the key things that was really impacted from this scandal was platinum. Platinum is notably, it's a precious metal, and it's most notably used for diesel vehicles, and the biggest diesel, you know, for emissions controls, and the biggest diesel market in the world is in Europe. So even before this scandal, there was a lot of people getting worried about, you know, diesel emissions. And, you know, some cities like London and Paris are are, you know, restricting the use of diesel cars in their major cities. But now this is really accelerated. So platinum got hammered. It hit a new six-year low, the lowest since 2008. And it got some pretty good, I think it reached a good support level because there's other demand factors for platinum. But palladium, which is used almost all for gasoline vehicles, went up and has been bid. So it's really been, you know, in the precious metals market, it's been a bit of a unique dichotomy where it's hit platinum and bid palladium.
So now, are you a palladium fan here now? I mean, I'm always a big fan when they trash something like they've done, excuse me, with palladium. I'm a fan. What are you?
Well, I have to be honest. I was much more favorable to platinum before the scandal, and I have to admit, it's trading right now about $950 an ounce, and that was right when it got to about $1,000 an ounce. It just, everything I was looking, I'm like, this is just too cheap. You know, cost of production, relative platinum virtue, it never trades much below the price of gold without getting a good bid. Demand, a huge demand from China was picking up, and European auto sales were picking up, which is key demand support. So I have to admit, I've been wrong, and, you know, just by trading, we always sometimes, you never know what can hit you. But I view that, just like you said, is I think it's too cheap, but also I like palladium too, partly because they got hammered so much. But some of the main reasons these two metals have been going down is because there's been a decline in global vehicle sales. You know, global vehicle sales have declined over the first half of this year. This has been the first, and if it continues, will be the first decline since the recession in 2008-09, which is notably because of declines in vehicle sales in China. So, you know, the markets are actually down before these numbers came out. And I think for these precious metals, platinum, palladium, which are most closely attached to global vehicle sales, for them to go much lower, you have to really expect a bit of a global, almost a complete recession. And I'm not really going that route. I don't really think China's going to go into a recession. I just think maybe their growth is slowing down.
Well, but wait a second. They keep telling me how good auto sales are. What happened? Wait a second.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the last 3 months in a row, assuming the data I get from vehicle sales, total vehicle sales in China were down. That's the first time that's happened since the big crisis in 2008, 2009. I think it was about 6 months in a row, maybe more, where vehicle sales were down. We've had 3 months now, up until August, where vehicle sales in China were down.
I can't believe it. You mean I wasn't getting good information when they were telling me how good auto sales were? That's unbelievable. I can't take it.
Well, remember we had this conversation. We were in July when the Chinese said, "Oh no, we're growing at 7%." You and I remember we both talked about, well, okay, if you're growing at 7%, why are your vehicle sales down for this period, this month, and the last month? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's more of the usual, and again, that's why I say that Janet Yellen's speech was very pointed and very direct to create the desired effect, which was a dead cat bounce. Now, I personally believe that the equity market is in trouble. Now, again, like, I don't want anybody to think that I'm predicting a collapse because, you know, I've been talking a lot about this week, and I actually want to discuss it with you because you were around back then. But the 1987 crash can never happen again in that format. I mean, we certainly can go down, as you saw in 2008, and get cut in half or more. But the overall one-night wonder of a 32% collapse is not in the cards because of a number of reasons. And when we come back with Mike, we're going to let him go ahead and handle that one because this guy's sharp. He knows his stuff. And they build great ETFs, the ETF securities. I love the, I personally do own silver, so SIVR, and the gold one, and I think that they're great, and I think we are at good levels to be able to step in here now. And again, you got to understand the way that they take care of them, because again, you get the best deal by using their products, because they do know how to book them and work them, and the fees are correct. So this is Mike McClone from ETF Securities, and this is Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out for a break. We'll be right back with more from my man Mike right after the break.
The 10,000 beers in 28 years.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mike McClone from ETF Securities. Ex-Chicago guy, ex-trader. Now a big-time New Yorker, but he still talks to us poor people in Chicago. So, Mike, okay, so, again, I think that the whole thing is manipulation. I think that it's just a bunch of hooey. But 87 was a unique event because back in 87, the futures market didn't trade 24 hours a day. There was no futures. The markets didn't open until basically 7:20. okay, when the currency started to open up. So that was part of the reason for collapse. We didn't have in what they call circuit breakers. So not that we can't go down, but I don't ever expect, and I don't think it's possible, that we could have another 32% drop in one morning. What do you think?
Well, I certainly hope not. I think you're definitely right. There's so many more circuit breakers involved. There's a lot more leverage. I mean, not so much leverage, but just a different, you know, a lot more futures involved. ETFs didn't even exist back then. But one thing people have to remember, I think, is one of the biggest crashes in history actually occurred in 1914, right in the aftermath of the beginning of World War One. And this actually happened because the market closed for 6 months, and then it opened up and it dropped over 20%. So, you know, markets will go down for other reasons. I think the worst thing for the market is actually the 87 crash. If you came in, you know, a lot of people said, oh, the market's a little bit overdone, like we've been saying for a while, and you're a bit overweight. That was a tremendous buying opportunity. Just wait, and you say at the end of the day, you push the button to buy, or you bought a mutual fund. It was one of the best buying opportunities in history. The only problem was people who were overweight and long, and people had a lot of this portfolio insurance. So the thing I'm worried about is a demoralizing type sell-off where we had, that was historically, was like in 1929, or we had in the year, starting in the year 2000, and we had to start in year 2008, where the market just goes down and down and down, but it has fundamental reasons to do it. And to me, one of the fundamental reasons is it went up too much, and that was on QE. And one of the reasons go down is, well, QE is being taken away, and we're switching, the Fed's talking tightening. Now, they're doing that on purpose, too, because they said they're worried about excessive risk-taking. So that, to me, is one of the biggest fears. And I'm not so much a bear on equities as I'm just looking at the pattern recognition and knowing, you know, one of the rules we learn in a pitch is the market gods did not allow that many people to make that much money for too long of a period of time. And that's what happened the last 4 or 5 years, and I think we're just kind of giving some of that back.
So now, the bond market itself has been indicating that they're kind of saying, screw the Fed, we want to make rates higher, and they've been pushing up yields on, you know, because obviously the bond price has been coming down. Who wins that battle?
Well, the bond market is always, one thing is being, you know, starting in the trading pitch in Chicago, you learn that the bond market is forward-looking, it's real money, and, oh, by the way, the Fed can't really control the bond market. The number one thing that's always going to impact riskless U.S. government securities, which are suspected to be, is inflation expectations. So if the Fed tightens early, and the market anticipates that this might be bad and it's going to actually create deflation or lower inflation, the bond market will rally. Now, initially, there would be a bit of a leverage thing because there's a lot of leverage going in the Treasury's markets, and rates going up might make long rates go up in the short term. But it's longer term, you know, a couple weeks or months afterwards that matters. And to me, that's been the key thing, is since the beginning of 2014, the U.S. 10-year note yield was 3%. Now it's 2.16%. So it's forward-looking. That is not a sign of a market that's expecting inflation or that the Fed keeps saying is going to pick up. That's a sign of a market forward-looking that says, oh, by the way, we're more worried about disinflation or deflation.
Okay, so I think we're obviously in a very deflationary time. It's not pretty. I mean, you're just seeing commodities throughout the globe being just hammered into oblivion, and they keep pouring on, which means that eventually we'll get some sort of dead cat bounce. But is there a bottom coming near in the commodities market, in your opinion? I know we both think gold and silver is near, but what about the rest of them?
Yeah, I think the number one commodity in the world is crude oil. Now, that's one thing I really learned by running the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index. That's based on oil production. Petroleum is 70% of that index. Why? Because it's 70% of all commodities in the world is petroleum, all based on crude oil. And so the number one commodity that really matters is crude oil. And you and I talked about this. When crude oil was about 60, we both thought it was going to break down. But when it got below 40, which was near the low for 2008, the low was 35, it's just, you know, it's pretty well supported. It's not going to go below that price anytime soon for a long period of time. It's just unlikely without a global collapse. So I see that's part of the reason I'm bullish on gold. That's one of the commodities that went down and dragged the whole commodity complex down. But how much lower is it going to go below 35? I just don't think it has a lot of room. So, you know, crude oil currently is around 45. Yeah, so maybe it goes down 10, but I think it's really stuck between 35 and 60 for quite a while. It just doesn't look like it's going to have much room to go below that level, which means the entire commodity complex is somewhat supported, but the trend probably is the problem. The trend remains bearish.
But what about Goldman Sachs and their $20 call? Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I think you have much better insight on that than I do, and we all know, I think, I prefer to refer to your comments, Will. They probably have a vested interest in maybe making some money if it goes down there, and if you get people bearish, they might be a buyer. And we all remember, was it a few years ago, they were looking for $200, or was that something like that?
Yeah, they called for 200, and I said, come on, are you kidding me? Of course, I said that when they were calling for 200, they wanted to be sellers, so they were looking to get it bid up, and now that they're looking for 20, I think they're looking to get sold down, because I believe that they want to be buyers as well. I mean, look, let's face it, the smartest shop on the street is probably still Goldman Sachs, so we can't discount. What they're doing is not illegal. It's very legal. It's very on top. It's what they do. But certainly they are not, from my experience in the trading pits, they are not immune to trying to play with things a little bit and have them move in the way that they want them to move. And certainly they're big enough to have that kind of control. So here we are, and we're getting into the fourth quarter of the year. Typically a big volatile time. That's typically when traders make a lot of their dough in the fourth quarter and the first quarter, because those are usually the busiest quarters of the year. What do you look for Q4? Volatility, rally, break, a little bit of both?
That's a good question. My biggest fear is this pattern we've been seeing in the stock market, where it's broken down during the kind of the quiet time of year. It's had a good fundamental reason to do that, and I think it's more likely it continues lower, which means volatility. It'd be a delight if the S&P, SPY, the S&P 500 major spider index, can close above 200. It was above that for options expiration for a little while, and it went back down below. To me, for signs of life, the SPY has to sustain above 200. Otherwise, I think it's consolidating lower levels and should continue lower. So let's look what it has to look forward to. If it goes up, it's Fed tightening. They're taking away QE. If it goes, and it's gone such a long way, so it looks like that's what it's looking forward to. And let's look back where it's come from, such a long way. So I think I'd be delighted if, the market could continue back up for the next 2-3 years and everything's fine, our houses and our portfolios continue to go up before the stock market, but let's be realistic. It's gone pretty far. The trend for now, since August, is down, and I suspect that's going to continue in Q4.
And I agree, and I would love to see the market break, only because, look, first of all, I'm short, but not because I'm short, and I'm not trying to be Goldman Sachs, but I think I'd like the market to break because I think actually it's actually healthier for the economy. Everybody worries about breaks, but the truth of the matter is that good sell-offs are actually good for the market. They actually create more opportunity and more ability, and they create a market that's more fluid, in my opinion. What's your take?
Yeah, agreed. And part of it is you have to be able to, we have to look at the market, see when we can sense and determine sentiment shifts. And I'm determining and sensing a sentiment shift in this market. And part of that is one thing I've mentioned earlier is meeting with wealth managers. The sense I get is they're raising cash. And that means they're looking for any rally to say thank you. The prudent investors, thank you very much for the rally. I'll get out of this and we'll look for better levels to invest in prudent and good products.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting, but it's always more interesting to have on my guy, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. I tell you that the products are great, and I'm watching them grow, and I'm excited to be involved with you guys, and I'm glad that you can always make this a regular part of your week. Mike McClone, thanks so much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
This has been my man, Mike McClone from ETF Securities. He takes care of it. Again, we love their products. They've got the metals products. They've also got the Zacks earnings funds, and it's worth checking them out. Go to their website, etfsecurities.com. Check out what they do, because, again, I'm telling you that, to me, it's the best at the metals for sure. And I am a proud owner of them, so I enjoy them. And this is The Bubba Show. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much.
It's late September, and I really should be.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.